In the last 24 hours, there were almost 9 times more cases reported outside China than inside China.
The coronavirus could be changing in quite a few ways. This is Tuesday, March 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program, and please join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also coming your way, a quick roadblock in the way of an agreement with the Taliban. North Korea again pushes the launch buttons, and some major changes in the number of Democrats seeking the U.S. presidency. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The World Health Organization is urging countries affected by the coronavirus to enact containment measures as the best way to slow down the spread of this deadly disease. While most of the nearly 89,000 cases of coronavirus are reported from China, WHO says the virus appears to be declining while it is accelerating elsewhere. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Outside China, South Korea is the most seriously affected country. The World Health Organization reports more than half of the more than 8,700 cases of coronavirus reported in countries outside China are in South Korea. WHO cites Italy, Iran, and Japan as other countries of greatest concern. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says COVID-19 is a unique virus with unique features. He says the virus is not influenza. He says it is a respiratory pathogen that is capable of community transmission. At the same time, he notes it can be contained with the right measures.
If this was an influenza epidemic, we would have expected to see widespread community transmission across the globe by now, and efforts to slow it down or contain it would not be feasible. But containment of COVID-19 is feasible and must remain the top priority for all countries.
The executive director of WHO Health Emergencies Program, Michael Ryan, says containment will not get rid of the virus, but the strategy will buy governments precious time in which they can prepare for the possibility of an epidemic of this deadly disease within its borders.
And if we're lucky and if we do the job really well, we may get the opportunity. We just might get the opportunity to interrupt transmission. But at the very minimum, containment is allowing us to significantly slow down the spread of the virus, thereby giving an opportunity for health systems to prepare, for PPE to be made available, for training to take place, for laboratories to get reagents, for laboratory technicians to be trained.
WHO says the earlier countries take action to aggressively identify people who are sickened by coronavirus, the better the outcome. The world body says applying basic public health measures quickly and efficiently will save lives. These measures include finding cases and tracing those who have come in contact with an infected person, managing people throughout the incubation period, and providing adequate care to those in the hospital. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States reported 4 more coronavirus deaths Monday, even as the number of new cases at the epicenter of the illness in China dropped to its lowest level in 6 weeks. Hundreds of patients were released from hospitals there. The deaths in the western state of Washington pushed the U.S. toll to 6 as the virus continued to spread across the globe, including about 100 cases in the United States. The World Health Organization reported nearly 9 times more cases outside China than inside, as you heard, with new reports of the outbreak in New York, Berlin, and Moscow. The death toll surpassed 3,000, and the number of people affected in 60 nations rose to more than 89,000. The spread of coronavirus impacted people throughout the world. Millions of Japanese schoolchildren are being held out of class for 4 weeks. Contaminated Israelis were forced to vote in Monday's national election at special polling places. And thousands of tourists were turned away from the shuttered Louvre in Paris, the world's most popular art gallery. In Germany, it's common for people to greet each other with a handshake, but when German Chancellor Angela Merkel showed up for a meeting with migrant groups, Interior Minister Horst Seehofer rebuffed her outstretched hand. The Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development predicted Monday that the coronavirus will slow global economic growth to its lowest level since the financial crisis. Meanwhile, the European Union is now on high alert. Lisa Bryant reports from the French capital.
The OECD expects the world economy to grow by only 2.4% this year, the lowest level in more than a decade. The organization says that growth could be even lower if the virus spreads further within continents. In Asia, the OECD forecasts China, the world's second largest economy and epicenter of the outbreak, will be hardest hit with just 4.9% growth, its lowest in 30 years. The news is not good in the European Union. Either. The bloc has announced 2,100 confirmed cases to date in 18 of the 27 member states and 38 citizen deaths. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says Brussels has created a coronavirus response team and elevated the region's risk level.
ECDC has announced today that the risk level has risen from moderate to high for people in the European Union. In other words, the virus continues to spread.
The OECD has downgraded growth expectations for the euro currency countries to about 1% for both this year and next, what it calls a subpar level. EU Economics Commissioner Paolo Gentiloni says it is too early to measure the economic impact of the virus for the bloc overall, but he says earlier expectations for a quick recovery might be overly optimistic.
It is time today to declare that EU is ready to use all the available policy options if and when needed to safeguard our growth against these downside risks.
While EU officials promise close coordination among member states, responses so far vary widely. The hardest-hit country, Italy, for example, has adopted a more relaxed approach than in France, which has far fewer cases. Here in Paris, the world's most visited city, the Paris Fashion Week that wraps up Tuesday was marked by absent designers and face masks as both fashion accessory and precautionary measure. The Louvre Museum remains shut for the moment, and the government canceled major events that draw big crowds like an upcoming book fair. The European Commission estimates the bloc is losing about $1 billion monthly in tourism revenue alone. It is urging member states to take measures to reduce the virus's economic impact on businesses and people. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In the United States, the Dow Jones Industrial Average surged more than 1,200 points, or 5%, on hopes that central banks will take action to shelter the global economy from the effects of the coronavirus outbreak. The huge gains clawed back some of the ground lost in a massive sell-off last week. Technology companies led the gains. The Dow jumped 1,293 points to 26,703. That was the biggest ever point gain for the Dow and the biggest percentage gain since March of 2009. The S&P 500 index rose 135 points, or 4.6%. The NASDAQ added 384 points, or 4.5%. Bond prices rose again, sending yields lower. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at VOAnews.com. Pakistan has temporarily closed a key southwestern crossing point with Afghanistan, saying the move is meant to prevent the spread of coronavirus on both sides of the border. The U.S. Surgeon General has a message for Americans inclined to wear a mask and ward off the deadly coronavirus. Don't. He said it actually doesn't help. It's not been proven to be effective in preventing the spread of coronavirus amongst the general public. Lee Man-hee, the leader of a South Korean religious sect that's been linked to over half of the country's coronavirus infections, kneels on the ground to ask forgiveness for the church's role in spreading the disease. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the VOAnews.com website. Less than 2 days after the United States signed a landmark deal with the Taliban to pave the way for peace in Afghanistan, its implementation has already hit the first speed bump. VOA's Ayesha Tansin is in Doha following up on the developments.
It didn't take long for the euphoria over the landmark deal to be tempered by reality. The road ahead is bumpy, starting with this.
The release of prisoners is not the authority of the United States. It's the authority of the Afghan government. We have not agreed with the U.S. on prisoner release. This should be discussed as part of comprehensive negotiations.
Releasing thousands of their prisoners is a Taliban precondition to move to the second phase, starting formal negotiations with a team representing other Afghans. According to the deal, those negotiations should start on March 10th. As far as the Taliban is concerned, this is now a U.S. headache.
We have decided the issue of our 5,000 prisoners with the Americans. They have promised in the agreement that those prisoners will be released before the start of the intra-Afghan negotiations. For us, this issue is settled.
The wording in the actual agreement, which calls for releasing up to 5,000 Taliban prisoners, is vague, leading to confusion as to whether the U.S. has promised the prisoner release or only promised to work toward it. Speaking on the CBS News program Face the Nation, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said no one is under any illusion that implementation of the agreement will be straightforward. Still, he called the signing of the deal a historic day. No one expects the prisoner release issue to derail the deal. However, it is highly likely to delay its implementation, specifically the start of the intra-Afghan negotiations. Ayesha Tansin, VOA News, Doha.
Happening now in Asia, the execution of four men convicted of the brutal gang rape and murder of a student on a New Delhi bus in 2012 was indefinitely postponed by a court Monday. Special court last month ruled the men were to be hanged Tuesday, but postponed it after one of them filed a mercy plea, the last remedy for death row convicts in India, to the president. This is VOA Asia. North Korea launched two short-range projectiles Monday. The launch comes as the North scrambles to prevent a potentially disastrous coronavirus outbreak within its borders. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
North Korea has said the coronavirus poses a potentially existential challenge. But on Monday, the North found time to test more missiles anyway. South Korea's military says the two ballistic missiles traveled about 240 kilometers, before splashing into the sea off the east coast. The weapons appear similar to the kind North Korea tested repeatedly in 2019, which were enough to raise tensions, but not to totally derail nuclear talks. North Korea had warned of major tests after the U.S. ignored its end-of-year deadline to offer more concessions in the negotiations. There were hopes the virus concerns could at least ease military tensions, especially after the U.S. and South Korea postponed joint military drills that the North sees as provocative. A virus outbreak in North Korea could be especially deadly, since the North does not have adequate medical supplies. Authorities have shut down foreign tourism, quarantined all arriving foreigners, and even prevented foreign diplomats from leaving their compounds. State media say nearly 7,000 people in North Korea are being medically monitored. North Korea says it has not yet found any coronavirus cases, though many experts are skeptical of that claim. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Coming your way, the U.S. political happenings. There are quite a few of them. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. In the Philippines, armed police entered a Manila mall after a gunman wounded a man and took dozens of people hostage on Monday. The gunman is an angry ex-guard who was recently fired by the company that provides the mall's security. Remember to visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. VOA Asia continues now with a look at American politics. U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar ended her bid for the Democratic presidential nomination Monday with plans to endorse former Vice President Joe Biden. Her decision came a day before Super Tuesday when voters head to the polls in 14 states. Klobuchar, from the Midwestern state of Minnesota, positioned herself as a practical pragmatist in the Democratic presidential nomination race, adopting decidedly moderate positions on several issues, including opposition to a government takeover of health care insurance in the United States. But despite a brief surge in political surveys, she did no better than third to sixth place finishes in the first four state nominating contests last month. Pre-election surveys for Super Tuesday voting showed her ahead only in her home state. Her aide said she would endorse Biden in a Monday night speech in Dallas, Texas. Biden swept to his first primary election victory in three runs for the U.S. presidency on Saturday, a convincing win in South Carolina. Klobuchar's withdrawal came a day after another moderate Democrat, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, ended his campaign. He also plans to endorse Biden. Billionaire environmentalist Tom Steyer also dropped out of the race after Biden's strong showing in South Carolina. The trio of withdrawals leaves four major Democratic contenders. Current leader, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, a self-declared Democratic socialist. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, another liberal who has fared poorly in early voting. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a billionaire whose name is appearing on ballots for the first time Tuesday. And Biden, who served two terms as the country's vice president under former President Barack Obama. Polling shows Biden winning seven of the 14 states voting Tuesday, with Sanders coming out on top in six states. Minnesota is now uncertain with Klobuchar's withdrawal, but Sanders is far ahead in California, the most populous state in the U.S. and the biggest prize in Tuesday's voting. Another major state in play in Tuesday's primary elections is the southern state of Texas. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has more from the Lone Star State.
There's something different about Texas, with its relaxed pace and strong traditions.
We take our barbecue pretty serious.
Just like politics.
We're a red state.
Some might say ruby red because of its predictable conservatives.
In 1980, Republican Ronald Reagan won 55% of the Texas vote and went on to win the presidency. Since then, every 4 years, Texas has voted Republican for president.
But slow down now. That tradition could change. While the state Democratic Party has historically been moderate, Senator Bernie Sanders, a Democratic socialist who promotes Medicare for all, is leading in the polls.
He stands for really good things, especially, you know, the health care and stuff.
I think Democratic socialism really takes the power away from the big businesses and gives it back to the people.
Others can't explain his appeal.
We've gone from, getting wealthy being the American dream to getting wealthy being something to be ashamed about.
Experts say younger voters and Hispanics will turn out for Sanders on Super Tuesday. In 2 years, Hispanics are expected to overtake whites as the majority in Texas.
Younger people, the minorities, that's going to make the difference in turning Texas blue.
At the American Rodeo semifinals, a Republican who may buck her party in November for former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg.
If Bloomberg gets nominated for the Democrats, then it would be a tough decision.
Recent polls show Sanders winning with 30% of the vote, ahead of former Vice President Joe Biden. Longtime Texas Republican consultant Craig Murphy says Sanders' numbers don't add up.
Even when he lost to Hillary last time, he had 35%. So he's literally polling below what he got 4 years ago.
Lupe Valdez witnessed Texas voting changes firsthand. She was elected in Dallas County, Texas, and became the nation's first Hispanic gay sheriff, but lost a run for governor. On Sanders,
I think he's promising a lot of stuff that people think is going to be done. But as much as I like his ideas, which, by the way, I love them, right now, I think it has to be at a slower pace.
Not fast enough for some. But this is Texas, where on Super Tuesday, every candidate wants to snare most of the state's 228 delegates. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Dallas, Texas.
Here's a news break from VOA Asia. Police in Bangladesh killed 7 members of a gang of armed robbers Monday during a raid on their hideout on a hillside overlooking a camp for Rohingya refugees in the southeast of the country. That's say police. Crime and violence are on the rise in the squalid, sprawling camps around the coastal city of Cox's Bazar, where hundreds of thousands of ethnic Rohingya took shelter. The U.S. Botanic Garden in Washington, one of the world's top plant conservatories, is marking its 200th anniversary this year. It was established by the U.S. Congress in 1820, making it one of the oldest botanic gardens in North America. VOA's Deborah Block tells us about this living plant museum.
Visitors come to the U.S. Botanic Garden to enjoy the variety of plants and the peace and serenity of nature. This woman works nearby.
It feels like a forest in a city, so I can be thinking about something else than work for even for 5 minutes, which is sometimes very nice.
Located on the National Mall, the Botanic Garden is made up of 65,000 indoor and outdoor plants, some more than 165 years old. Inside the conservatory, the greenhouse, there are rooms with plants that thrive in different environments, like this tropical room. Since its beginning, visitors have been educated about the value of plants.
We still have a very important role to play in educating people about the importance of plants, particularly in urban audiences, where people may not have a direct connection to a farm, may not understand where food in particular comes from.
One of the garden's main attractions are the 4,000 orchid plants that come from around the world. During the annual spring orchid show, a sea of flowers bloom, including some that are endangered. During the Christmas season, a very popular exhibit showcases toy trains chugging through plants and structures made from plant-based materials. As part of the bicentennial, the newest exhibit, Deeply Rooted, Branching Outward, highlights the scientific exploration of plants, which the garden hopes will give visitors.
So just a greater appreciation for plants, for plant discovery, for plant exploration.
The U.S. Botanic Garden is free and open every day. With more than 1 million visitors a year, it has enlightened its guests for 2 centuries and will continue to for generations to come. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of a parrot, you probably think of a small, chatty bird. Paleontologists in Australia and New Zealand were looking through some 19 million year old fossils when they discovered what they say is the world's largest parrot. Named Heracles inexpectitus, the scientists' research suggests that this parrot stood about 1 full meter tall and weighed 7 kilograms. In an email to VOA, research leader Professor Trevor Worthy of Australia's Flinders University says since it was such a heavily built bird, it probably was unable to fly, so it spent most of its time on the ground. But Professor Worthy also pointed out that even the flightless kakapo, a living giant parrot, are skilled climbers. So he suspects Heracles inexpectitus would have been able to get up the trees and then could have glided down to the ground. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud and a whole bunch of other ways. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page. See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And let us hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, VOAasia@VOAnews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Dan Crafton, the managing editor of VOA Asia, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. Also, thanks to our listeners and our affiliates, such as Falcon Radio and Adamson University in the Philippines, Radioactive at Tamasek Polytechnic in Singapore, and CCU Radio at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have yourself a marvelous day ahead.